Díh Galair agus fáilte romh go dtí an clár.
No mhaoine am antraf, no mhaoine amháil. Ní chuir mé an Babelfish mai cuairt. Fáin second, inis.
How's that? Can we?
Yeah, clear
to everyone understand us? Yeah. Okay, nice one. Brendan's Liverpool are really in this thing. United were absolutely bobbins, and after Paddy's Day, we're the only ones not hungover because we're the day trippers. On tonight's show, we revel in the carnage of the Paddy's Weekend Massacre of United in Old Toilet. We are joined from Malaysia by Jagdish Singh at some ridiculous hour, so let's hope he stays awake long enough for us to go through the weekend's events and take a look at what's to come. You all gave out about Lee Mahaddy's sweariness the last time he was on, so we brought him back to swear some more. And we're missing the culture factor that Molly often brings us this week, so we've balanced out the Jackeen influence post-St. Patrick's Day by bringing in Green Scouser, a.k.a. Niall Sheridan, to share his thoughts on all things red. Right then, a little bit of an announcement for you tonight, one that's actually more than a little one, quite monumental. Unfortunately, from the 1st of April, the Day Trippers will no longer exist. And what's this now, I hear you ask? But have no fear, because we will be relaunching as LFC Day Trippers. LFC Day Trippers will be a relaunch and a rebrand of our pod. Molly's Beyond the Cop site and Col Turley's Liverpool Ways will be joining us. Now, we know this is an unusual step for Liverpool sites to merge as opposed to setting up a series of individual websites, but it means that all you lovely people will get a brand spanking new website with lots of articles, plenty of rumours, interviews, and an awful lot more. We mean to aim at the day-tripping fan particularly, but it's something that will have, I think, an appeal for everybody. Now, Phil and Molly have been working away at all hours to get the site up and running. Over the next couple of weeks, we want everyone to follow at Beyond the Cop on Twitter. And this will become our main Twitter handle and change to LFC Day Trippers. The site will be live at noon GMT on April the 1st with our first pod as the LFC Day Trippers. So, Molly, I think you could maybe give us a bit more background on this.
Yeah, well, I set up Beyond the Cop about 12 months ago now. And at the time, I was kind of targeting the fans who couldn't always get to the game. Hence the name Beyond the Cop, basically, you know. So I had no podcast with it. It was just a place to put down a few rumours and have guys to write some articles and put their opinion pieces on it and anything and everything basically went into it. But really, it was only a pet project of mine. It wasn't any kind of professional look. I didn't really go out for that. But then I started talking to yourselves and I realised, I said, these guys are, they're in the same kind of market as me. They're looking at the day trippers, guys who can't get to every game, who try to get over whatever game they can. Your podcast, I listened to it before I came on the show. I thought it was some fantastic stuff on it. And I thought, you know, this would be ideal. This would be a deal partnership. So myself and Phil started chatting and we thought, what better to have one site and one pod together? So that's what we're looking to do. And plus, we have a couple other social media accounts, like maybe Phil might speak about the Liverpool Ways and stuff, who's also coming on board. So we'll have a very large social media backing. We'll have the podcast and we'll have the site.
We're bringing something different, and there's so many good Liverpool sites out there that I'm very confident that we're bringing brings a slightly different flavour to what's there at the moment. It adds to the richness and the vibrancy of the Liverpool blog and website communities that are there, and I think that going forward, you know, we'll fit in nicely, and it will be act as an information point and a social point for all the Liverpool fans who aren't necessarily living in around Merseyside, you know, to come to and share what's going on and the whole lot that's there as well. We have some unique features in there. The more will be revealed as the site goes live, but like, obviously, look, I don't want to give away everything because we'll need to build the site as we come up to it over the next couple of weeks, but I'm really excited about what we have.
Are you going to give us any little teasers at all about what might be kind of specific to the site that mightn't be necessarily everywhere else?
No.
And it is important to say as well that it's not just the Irish side of it. It's
no.
This is
like, again, okay. Look, there'll be travel tips and stuff on it, and it won't be just concentrated from Ireland. It'll be for everyone that wants to get to the game, the best ways to get to games, etc. That's something that's in there. We have a few unique things in the actual site as well, and it's fully interactive for people who come onto the actual site. It's not just here's articles, here's stuff, here's what it is. There's stuff that people can get involved with on the actual site, more than just polls and things like that.
As Phil just said there, it's going to be very much fan-friendly, very much interactive. You know, we are obviously going to have the podcast, we're going to have articles, opinion pieces, scout reports, all that type of stuff. But there's going to be some extra features that a lot of other sites don't have, and I think people will like that.
Absolutely. Well, April the 1st then, folks, keep an eye out for that.
Or it's the most elaborate April Fool's hoax ever.
Which is probably far more likely. Far more likely. Okay. So we'll go straight into our review of Manchester United versus Liverpool. And happy days indeed, as a markedly small-time United under the ever-small-time David Moyes were put in their place. Now, what a result it was. Supremely easy, mature, a confident win. We were billed as favourites, we went to the home of our greatest rivals, and we lived up to that billing. Now, it sets up the last 9 matches really nicely. This is definitely on, this dream of the title. But first, let's revel in the magnificence of that win that was. Was it better, lads, than the 08-09 win? Jag, I'll come to you first. What do you think?
You know what? I think it was... I'm still running on adrenaline right now, so I'm definitely going to say it's better, right?
Yeah.
And like I said, I was trying to stay awake. But from an overall perspective, I thought everybody played a much more decisive way of getting the ball to the other side of the team. I thought the tactics that Rodgers put out was a little bit more different from the rest of the other games we've seen so far, and we've talked about a diamond before, and to be honest with you, I just couldn't figure out what Sterling was trying to do, and you're definitely going to talk about that later on, but
sure, yeah,
I think everybody put in a good shift.
Yeah, so for you, would rate is better than the 4-1 in 08-09.
For me, I still, you know, I have a lot of affection for what Rafa did, and I think the 4-1 was a lot more, well, at that time, a lot more emotional. But this was more, I was calmer,
yeah, it was.
And so I think it was from an emotional perspective, this one was more decisive.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. And Niall, what's your take on it? Better than the previous one?
Yeah, I'm of the opinion. I think Sunday's game was perhaps the better win than the one in 09. I think that's due to the fact, really, like, in 09, okay, we won 4-1, but the game was very close. It could have gone either way, really, until Vidic sending off and Aurelio's goal. That's really the only moment in 09 that I was confident. But it was just total domination from us on Sunday, not only with the ball, but also without the ball. I thought our pressing was fantastic. And I just couldn't see United, once we scored first, I just couldn't see United getting back in the game. So for me, yeah, I'd rate Sunday's win as perhaps more important and perhaps even more impressive than the 4-1 win in 09.
Yeah, Paul Brennan, what's your feel about it? Did you enjoy that more than the previous win?
Yeah, I'd say so. The 08-09 one was more unexpected, really. But I think because that was where we kind of went, there was last chance saloon. Then they were obviously the best team in the country at that time. Whereas this time, the whole kind of world was watching us saying, like, you're better than them now, what are you going to do? Mm. And we just went out and proved it. Like I said, just complete domination. Like, they didn't have a chance, really. Mm. And, it could have been more, even. So I'd say it was, because of the expectation that was on us.
Yeah, that's a very good point, isn't it, Lee Mahadi, that we went there as favourites and lived up to the billing, as I was saying earlier on, which is a bigger ask, really.
Yeah, in essence, I think that's actually what kind of took the gloss off it for me, though. I thought that... because the honest was actually honest to win it, because we went in as favourites this time, clear favourites, you know, we were well expected to be this pretty terrible United side. I thought that in 08-09, I thought the fact that it was so unexpected at the time, and the fact that it was probably one of the top three teams that Ferguson ever managed at the time, you know, that had just come off like an unbelievable like league and Champions League double, you know, the season before, and they were in the, and at that time as well, they were in the midst of like what was probably the longest defensive streak in the history of the Premier League. Was it at some point?
I think so.
I think when Van der Sar was in goal, Vidic and Ferdinand, they'd held like a ridiculous record, like a total domination at the back line. Like, but I thought that, you know, it's all down to circumstance. I think the circumstances that you're in at the time kind of, it can kind of influence whether you believe that the win is actually better than one or the other. I think that, you know, I think because of, I don't know, it's hard to put it in one way because, I don't know, I actually literally can't put it, I can't really put it into words correctly. It's that, nah, go on, I'll let it pass over for me. Fucking losing
totally stumped.
Fucking,
yeah, hey, can I say something though?
Please, I
thought if it was Fergie, if it was Fergie at the dugout, it was a bit, it would have been a much more beautiful win. I thought.
Really, I mean, you couldn't get the enjoyment from torturing Moyes, you know?
I think everybody gives United a handicap with Moyes. Everybody has a pitiful perception of him at United right now. So, you know, you tend to say, oh, I'm sorry about this, but this is Moyes, right? But it hadn't been Fergie, right? The bastard over there. I would have really enjoyed it.
That is the most joyous thing about that win. Is the face on fucking Ferguson in the stand. I don't give a fuck. When it went up, he was just like a thundering gobshite sitting there going, I'm responsible for this. I was the one who got Moyes the job. Woohoo!
And the camera was on him just long enough for someone to make a perfect vine of it as well.
Just the most curmudgeonly of all the trippers wants to sing the praises of one red in particular. Now, this is strange. We have justifiably slaughtered Glenn Johnson for the majority of this season. And I know, personally, I was irritated as fuck watching him the other day. But according to my very, very upbeat, positive, optimistic colleague here, he was the consummate fullback, his words. So, young Casey, you all right there, fella?
Yeah, I tell you, my thoughts on Johnson are, and I said it last week, I was annoyed with his constant selection for about 3 weeks up until this, right, and when he came back and the performance he was putting in. But the one thing I said was that maybe he was playing himself into some form. And I thought on Sunday, he actually, they only had 18 crosses in the whole game. They switched Januzaj over to try target Flanagan at one stage, and he moved Mata out. And despite us all saying Mata's not a winger, Mata is a top-class footballer, right? And Johnson handled him very easily. He put him to bed. And I thought Johnson actually gave us something down the right wing. And, you know, they weren't getting streams of crosses in. He did his job admirably. He defended his flank very well. And he provided an outlet in attack nearly all the time. Every time he went, the ball would go wide to whoever was on the right-hand side, whether it was Henderson or one of the forwards who peeled off or Sterling into that space. Johnson was always an outlet in an attacking sense. And when I say I want to sing his praises, I thought that was the best performance from Glenn Johnson in a long time that I can, like, we're probably going back to the Fulham game before he got injured in October. And, you know, it's very hard to actually criticise the fella for the run he put in on Sunday, because I think he did very, very well. And especially, like, he's been searching for form, and he found form on Sunday. I've no issues with him at all. I thought he did well. And I just wanted to say, because we have rollocked him for being shit for quite a long while.
Yeah, I think you're just doing some sort of damage limitation there and trying to even things out. I'm not sure. I don't see that myself. I didn't particularly see that myself. Jag, would you agree that Johnson was much improved on previous weeks?
Yeah, I'm with Phil. I think our expectations of Johnson have been so horrible the past few times that if he puts in a good shift, it's suddenly back to his good old self again. But yeah, Phil's right. Off the ball, he was good. He was giving the support that Henderson required, and Sterling as well. The one thing that I remember about this match about Johnson was that he comes on the flank, cuts into the left. He doesn't square, though. He tries to take a shot, but his reaction is so slow that everybody knows he was trying to take a shot. And so that happened a couple of times, and I think that pretty much sums up what I think about Johnson, is that he's no more the unpredictable attacking fullback that we thought he was. Yeah, I think he's losing his edge right now.
Yeah, there was definitely something. There's something more cautious about him, isn't there? He's definitely far more cagey in his movements, and looks like a lad who's kind of I don't know, compensating for the fact that compensating for something. If someone had told me he was carrying an injury, I'd have said that's okay, because even he looks restricted in his movements to me anyway. Lee, where are you standing on this whole thing?
To be fair, give him his due. Like, he was very, very good in comparison to what he's been the previous couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Like, we, as you said, we rollicked him when he was bad, and do you know what, it wasn't even so much for me that he was bad, it was the fact that he just didn't look fucking arsed. Like,
yeah, yeah.
That's the biggest problem, you know, like, we've had some perennially shit players down the years, but, like, we've ended up loving them we have once they fucking give their all, like, and that was what was driving me mad, you know. Johnson, an extremely high earner at the club, just not looking like he was bothered, and then even though we have fucking Sissoko, who's at least fucking Traore Mark II, like, at least... You know, for all of his shortcomings, he was going out there and he was actually putting a fucking shift in.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that was what was driving me mad about Johnson so much. The fact that he was letting so many markers get in behind him. The fact that he wasn't even jumping on corners to beat the man to the header. Like, yeah, it was really fucking grinding on me.
But you see a marked improvement there the other day.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Yeah, it feels like the whole mentality that's being instilled in the entire squad has actually finally warmed its way over to him.
Okay. Niall, I'm going to come to you next on our centre-back partnership, Scotland Agger. Now, they've looked dodgy for long spells at various times. They did seem to excel the other day. Agger seemed to have pretty much the measure of the United attack. I know Scotland made a few impressive blocks and headers away. By the same token, Van Persie did at times find acres of space. I think it was more to do with his uselessness on the day than any particularly brilliant defending that stopped him from scoring. Where would you feel that their level of performance was, Niall?
I was very pleased with the performance of Scotland Agger there during the weekend. I think they've definitely benefited from playing alongside a regular back four. I think that's something we were all kind of saying earlier in the season, that it's been affecting their defensive performance. And I think now, the last two games against Southampton and United, I think the defence as a whole has looked very solid. And then... obviously, then, this makes Skirtle and Agger appear more solid as well. I actually thought Skirtle was very good. I'm not Skirtle's the biggest fan, but I thought he was brilliant. As he was in the first game against United earlier in the year, I thought he was magnificent Sunday. That was a wonderful block for on Rooney's volley, because Rooney caught it very well. So I think Skirtle really impressed me. Agger, I think, is he's looked sharper, I think, Agger, since he came back from the injury. I don't know, maybe it's... Since Saka was also playing well prior to his injury, so maybe now Agger realises, you know, that he actually has competition for that left centre-back role. So I think Agger has definitely improved his performances over the last few weeks as well. So, you know, overall, I thought we looked much more solid. They looked much more solid as a defensive partnership on Sunday.
Paul Brennan, were you happy with our consistency in the back four?
Yeah, I thought all the defence did well. Like, I thought Johnson did, like the lads had said. Like, he was good defensively, and he was okay going forward as well. I think, like Jag said, he's not the kind of rampaging fullback he used to be. But it was good to see him, like, play very well defensively, I thought. And Skirtle and Agger, again, they were brilliant. I think there was only one time Van Persie looked like he was going to score, where he peeled off Skirtle and got the header. Like, he kind of missed Cuyff horribly. But, like, he did get the ball in the box a few times, but it was kind of out to the side and all, and he was closed down fairly quick. I thought overall... the defence did really well, especially the centre-backs. And, like, Agger does seem to have been better in the past couple of weeks, and maybe he's got a bit of a kick up the hole, because there's been a lot of talk about him being binned in the summer and stuff, so maybe he is kind of fighting for his future, really.
I think we're looking at Agger and just on the whole thing, like, again, it's maybe, you know, players can take a while to come back to what they were before an injury, a few games. A bit like Joe Allen, you know, people were quick to jump on his back when he wasn't up to the same level as soon as he came back. And, you know, Agger has gone in and he had the read of Van Persie. He looked after him. It was very easily done. I don't want to dwell on United because I can't be arsed with them, to be honest with you. But, like, Van Persie has been piss poor for them all season. I know most United fans wouldn't have batted an eyelid had Van Persie been left out of this game. And, you know, I thought when Welbeck did come on eventually for the last 15 minutes, he gave more to that United team than Van Persie had. And we know that Skirtle has had issues with your man Welbeck in the past. So for to play Van Persie again, small time Moyes, you know, he goes with a name rather than ability, and you know, it plays right into our hands, and our two centre halves were well capable for a centre forward who in no way, shape or form it likes to be physical in a traditional fashion. Van Persie's a sly little runt when it comes to, you know, digs, elbows, winding players up and the whole lot, and I admire that in a centre forward, but he's not going to put himself around physically, and he didn't even look bothered on Sunday, right? And they had more to deal with in terms of what Rooney was bringing to the table, because I actually thought Rooney played really well for United. Of all the United players, I thought he was the one that was up for the actual game and wanted to do something. But you know, Agger and Skirtle were well able to deal with him, and it was great to see, you know, being so solid at United. And Skirtle, to his credit, put in a monster block just before half time when we were 1-0 up, and that, between the save from Mignolet and that block from Skirtle, we go in with a clean sheet and a 1-0 lead. They equalise there. You never know what happens in the second half. It comes back to the whole lottery idea of the game.
Yeah, I thought their front foot defending was brilliant. A lot of the time when United didn't have like that much meaningful possession, but any time they got it into their front players, like there was a lot of kind of tackles going in straight on the striker's touch, you know, like wrapping their foot around and getting it away. And that's like Phil said, which kind of Van Persie didn't seem too interested in that, and he just faded out of the game straight away.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I just want to say they didn't put a lot of crosses in as well. I was worried about that before the game. I was hoping that Sako was in, because I was thinking Moyes is supposed to, you know, the kind of manager who puts a lot of crosses in. Mm. But I think after he got slated by the media about 81 or 90 crosses in one of the games early on, I think he changed his tactics. But there weren't many crosses and there weren't many set pieces as well. You've got to give kudos to Flanagan and Johnson for that as well, I think. Yeah.
Well, absolutely. And that brings us nicely to John Flanagan. He's a bit bloody good, this kid, isn't he? I loved his little bit of needle at the end, giving the fist up to the United fans on the way out of the... Apparently Suarez was shopping in Manchester City Centre as well, which is good crack. But John Flanagan, Jag, how did you feel he did? He certainly has the heart for the battle.
He reminded me a lot about Shelby, the last time that Shelby gave the two fingers to Fergie.
Yeah.
He was running on pure adrenaline. I think he was really running on pure adrenaline. He couldn't give a fuck who Johnny Jai was or who Renpus he was. He just went for it.
And, yeah.
And he was playing on a very thin, fine line of hurting somebody and not, right? Yeah. He was putting in the right shift. I think he was being managed by Agger as well. I think Agger was in his ear, giving him the right advice at the right time, in some of the good plays over there.
Yeah, Niall, he was probably, like, if you're going to be picky about it, possibly fortunate to stay on the pitch despite his wonderful performance. How did you feel that John Flanagan did on the day?
I thought he was brilliant. As Jag was saying, I think it was noticeable as well how high up our both our fullbacks were when United had the ball. I lost count of the amount of occasions where Raphael just played a simple 5-yard ball into Mata. The Mata couldn't turn. He had no time in the ball whatsoever. Flanagan was right up his arse, you know.
Yeah.
I think also Jag was saying Agger was talking Flanagan through the game. I also noticed once Flanagan was booked in the first half, Rodgers had a little word with him. He was kind of, I think he was just telling him to relax a little bit because he was running on adrenaline. But I thought Flanagan was brilliant. I actually think I prefer Flanagan on the left-hand side. I don't know what it is. I just think he looks... more solid playing left back, but I thought he was brilliant. Both our fullbacks were brilliant, in fairness, but I think it's probably up there with one of our best defensive performances of the season.
Yeah, it's funny that, isn't it? I remember Jamie Carragher doing a job there for a season, and he was outstanding at left back, probably better than he had been at right back. Lee, is it fair to say that you know, he's a guy who's gotten an awful lot of sort of faint praise? Yeah, he's not bad considering, or he's very limited. Is this a guy who can go on to be a fixture in Liverpool's first team for the next few seasons if the success continues as we hope it will?
You do think so, and you hope that it will be so as well, but is it something that you really want to pin your hopes on, especially with the Champions League looming? Now, we've more or less sealed the place in it, so do you really think now, long-term, over both the Premier League season and potentially a Champions League campaign, do you believe that he would be the right answer long-term? Mm. I think that's a question everybody has to kind of ask themselves.
Yeah, and where would you go on that?
I'll be honest, because of his versatility and his... honestly, you... don't want to keep referencing it or anything like that, but he is still in many ways limited, and an awful lot of his game is built around more sort of heart and technical ability. An awful lot of the like, nearly the way Carragher was. Mm. Like, he wasn't the best on the ball. It wasn't about technique with Carragher. It was about having the fucking heart of a lion and the ability to read the game the same way. And I believe Flanagan has that lovely bit of Scouse heart about him, and the fact that he did play the game more on passion than, you know, than logic. I think for a good fucking portion of that game, he towed the line with Clattenburg a good few times. Like, I literally thought at one stage when he crashed into Raphael, I thought he was getting the shower. Like,
I think
he should be given credit for it. Like, I know Noel mentioned about Rodgers talking to him. It takes a lot for a player to be able to take that in on the pitch as well, because there's so much going on in the game that, like, you know, and people who will play will know this, that people talk an awful lot to you when you're on the pitch. For it to actually sink in and affect how you play the game, because when Rodgers pulls them, they've switched Mata and Januzaj, and they're trying to get Januzaj to expose Flanagan's pace, so he dives in and gives away a clear yellow card free kick. And to Flanagan's credit, he doesn't dive in for the rest of the game. He goes in 50-50 and hard tackles, but he doesn't go into a silly challenge, one that would bring a yellow card to him. And you have to have a good level of game intelligence to be able to take on the instruction and affect it almost immediately when you're given it to retain your position and retain your place in the 11 when you know the chances are and the likelihood is as a fullback you're going to be in a yellow card place at some stage during the rest of the game.
Yeah. That's spot on.
You agree, Jack?
That's spot on. And I think when he was good going forward as well. I think he was clumsy, but he did dribble past a couple of players. I thought it was really impressive.
Yeah, I think there's an awful lot of absolute bobbins, as a United fan would say, talked about Flanagan's ability. I think the guy clearly has talent. Brendan himself has talked this week, only in the aftermath of the match, about his tactical proficiency and the fact that he's putting in a serious amount of work on his technical ability as well. Paul, I'll ask you the same question I asked Lee. Would you be happy to see John Flanagan in situ as a Champions League right back for Liverpool or left back?
I'm not sure about the first team. I definitely think you can get someone better than Flanagan, but I think he's a great squad player to have because, like, I don't think nerves really affect him. Like, you can see that from his performance. Like, you know, the derby that he came into at Goodison, he was one of our best defenders in that. Like, he's kind of nailed down his place since then and been our best fullback. And the same with Old Trafford, like, he obviously, there was a few dicey moments where you're hoping he wasn't going to fucking lunge in or something. But it wasn't because of nerves, that's just because of how he plays. Like, so, like, I'd be really happy with him as a backup, because I think, so, like, you know, if he hasn't played in a couple of months, who would you want as coming into your team? Would you want him or Enrique? I'd go with Flanagan every time because I think Enrique is a bit of a space cake. He needs to be in the team all the time. I think his head goes a bit. Yeah. Whereas Flanagan, obviously the comparison is obvious. He's a bit like a young Carragher, where he's not really fazed by anything. Like, and obviously he's not like Flanny Alves or anything like that. Yeah. But like Jack said, he kind of, like, when he saw Mata running at him, he's like, oh, well, I'll just take it past him. Yeah. And then he kind of went on a cross-field dribble more than a forward dribble. Yeah. But, like, I think he does have a lot of composure. Like,
yeah. I think, though, we probably forget a bit because it's been a while since we were in the Champions League, apart from the Europa League, and have a squad. When you're there, it's not so much that here's a player that can come in and do a job for you. Here's a player that will have to do a job for you. It's not will come in and can come in. It's will do a job, because you're not going to play the same 11 or a preferred 11 week in, week out over the course of a 38-game season. You're going to have to play players on a Wednesday night and again change it around on Saturday and have a certain level that when they come in on a Saturday are going to treat every game the same way as we're treating these last 10 games, which are essentially cup finals, because they're even bigger games. With us back in the Champions League, it's imperative that we make the Champions League the following year. It's not just a case of let's get in and celebrate that we're there. We have to make sure we're in there
fucking
again.
Fucking Spurs.
No, but it's serious, and you need that level of quality right the way through the squad, and he brings that level of quality. And the other thing is he has other fullbacks breeding up his hole from the 21s. The likes of Brad Smith, he's an absolutely incredible talent coming through. If he progresses the same way Flanagan has with the same application, Flanagan is going to have his feel his shorts being tugged as well by this kid. So, you know, we're seeing a bit of competition come through. Like what you said around Enrique and Sissoko, if we could get in a top-class left-back, I wouldn't have an issue with seeing those two go out if Flanagan and a top-class full-back are our options going into next season.
Okay. I've never seen Carragher as a Champions League final player. But he was, right? And I see Flanagan there as well. I see the same passion. I see the same technical ability that's not so good, but it's getting there. but it's not so good. And that's pretty much similar to what Kara had as well. Kara was never the fastest. He was never the most technical player out there. He wasn't very flamboyant, but he did the job. And he was in Istanbul, right? Yeah. Yeah. So, and I see Flano as that as well. I see Flanagan very much a younger version of Carragher, the same passion, the same mentality.
Yeah, well, I'm right behind Gianluca Flanbrata myself, so I'm gonna move it on now to Raheem Sterling, and we'll move it up the pitch a bit. Now, in fairness to the kid, he looked imperious at various times, and then drifted out of it at others. He was playing the point of that midfield diamond. So was his absences from the match at times him being a fish out of water, or should he be commended for the fact that he is tactically flexible as a player? We saw him knocking Fellaini off the ball, although on the day that possibly wasn't that tough, and winning a lot more against other physically dominant midfielders. And upshot is we've got wonderful options now to rotate him and Coutinho. Niall, how do you feel that Sterling did in that diamond?
Yeah, I was pleased with Sterling. I think something that's talked about a lot with Sterling is his game intelligence. And I think that was shown on Sunday, particularly off the ball. If you watch Sterling, I know Fellaini, he's not highly rated by many people apart from Moyes, but Fellaini never had time to turn on the ball. He's probably not capable of turning on the ball, but you know what I mean. Sterling was always on him, hassling him. Same with Carrick. Lots of United's play. Well, traditionally, most of United's play goes through Michael Carrick. He was anonymous for most of that game.
Yeah.
I think a lot of that was to do with Sterling as well. And then also, on the ball, maybe he didn't have as much joy as he had in previous games, but I think he keeps play ticking over. That's another thing he's got a lot better at this season is his ball retention. Maybe towards the beginning of last season, he just wanted to get the ball and take people on, but that's something Rodgers has installed or has instilled in him. I think he played a key role in the first penalty or Raphael's handball. He played a nice little ball out to the Sturridge on the wing who found Suarez. So I actually think Sterling is suited to that role. I like the idea of having then Coutinho to bring off the bench for the last 15 minutes. I was really impressed with Sterling again on Sunday.
Yeah, Lee, do you feel that Sterling's a guy who should be starting all the time, irrespective of whether it's the point of a diamond or on the right of a three?
At the moment, given the current squad, yeah, I believe he's an absolutely nailed-on starter because he has the pace to absolutely burn a fullback on either wing. It doesn't matter. And then, as we've seen there just the past Sunday, like he actually does have the tactical flexibility to play at the head of a diamond and hassle defensive midfielders off the ball. I believe that's what Rodgers wanted him for. The fact that he does have a bit more of a propensity to actually chase back and, you know, harry for the ball an awful lot more than, well, not even an awful lot more, but a little bit more than Coutinho would even. You know, Coutinho still is more of an archetypal number 10 who hasn't, you know, who would rather flow in his space between the defence and the midfield, the opposing defence and the midfield. But Sterling at times was actually very deep. As Fellaini and Carr tried to advance forward, like, you know, tried to advance the whole formation forward, Sterling was right back in there. He had no problem running back into around the centre circle and trying to harry the ball back. But now, that said, I still thought that his influence waned for, you know, intermittent periods of the game, and I think that his best place is still out wide, obviously. But as I said, it's great having the tactical flexibility. Something that Sterling and, you know, like we said before, that Flanagan offers as well. Like the fact that a player that can play in multiple positions is worth his weight in gold. Like,
for sure. It seems to be very much a Brendan Rodgers prototype, is a player who has that sort of adaptability about him, Paul. For you, for the last nine, is it very much a kind of a rotation between Joe Allen, Coutinho and Sterling, or is there some of those that you, or so any of those that you start in each game?
Yeah, I think Sterling has to start, really. And I preferred him out wide. Like, he was kind of steady rather than really spectacularly creative or anything in the match. But like if you took it on its own kind of merits, that is, oh, John Giles, accidental fucking Giles. Jesus Christ, the pod's gone to shite. Accidental Giles.
Did he play with courage and
conviction? Well, like, if you just looked at his performance, like he did a good tactical job, but he wasn't like really kind of creative or anything. But when you consider the fact that he's 19 and he's only played, what I think it was half an hour or something against Southampton in that position.
He showed a lot of moral courage there.
Oh, all right, boys, he's going to finish up.
I'll throw a fucking Eamon Dunphy pen drop as well in.
Come on, right.
Okay, coming back to the team again and looking at some of the characters on the day, Suarez and Sturridge, neither of them particularly brilliant on the day. There was a lot of possession coughed up around the box, some missed chances. So even if the two of those are off form and we still manage to put three past United, is that saying a lot about us or is it saying more about them? Suarez, even when things weren't coming off, was lovely to watch. Again, as per usual, wonderful effort. How did we feel, or how are we feeling about our front two going into the last nine, Phil?
You can only feel like the happiest spad can walk the earth.
Yes.
It's like there's no two ways about it. The two lads, like Sturridge is having one of those days. I remember similar to the Arsenal FA Cup game where he gets two chances early on that you would put your mortgage on that he's going to bang one of them away and it doesn't come off. Now, you don't even ever get the feeling that it's not going to be one of the days from him. Even though he didn't score, you always felt another chance might fall to him when he'd score it again. And Suarez just ploughs and ploughs and ploughs. And even when De Gea pulls off that wonderful save, you just know that just made him angrier. So when he did score the goal, he just erupts in merriment and runs to the Stretford End and celebrates with the United fans. They're just so happy to see him. It was just the biggest smile. I tell you,
just breaking his bollocks laughing at them. It was fucking deadly.
It's the pointing that does it, isn't it?
It's top counting. Like, yeah. It's so much good counting.
Yeah.
He's
Skirtle
just
played a blinder in that celebration as well.
What is Skirtle doing? He's just turned Suarez into a large human penis.
The one thing I'll say at that stage, Skirtle was playing as an auxiliary centre forward. I don't know if anyone noticed this. Every time we see him to go forward, Skirtle was on the edge of the box. We're going, what are you doing up there? What are you doing? What are you doing? Go on, do it if you want, but like, make sure you're back. And then all of a sudden he's back. Skirtle was a man possessed. I've never seen him turn in a performance. He was really just obsessed with destroying United on Sunday, and it has to be commended. Fair play to him.
The way he actually managed it, like the way when Rooney, that ball fell to Rooney just at the edge of the box, then the way he fucked himself at it like John McClane in front of a shotgun, fucking mental.
I tell you what, right, if going back to everything that Rodgers has said about Skirtle, I know we're talking about Sturridge and Suarez, but it's worth pointing out again, he's bigged them up all season long, has Brendan, right? And you can actually see a guy playing with a massive amount of confidence at the moment. Even if he is liable to the odd error, he hasn't made one for a while. Touch wood, he doesn't make one until next season. But like, he's got to be commended for you know, never letting the head go and getting on with his game and trusting in himself to deliver. And he delivered big time. And at the end of the day, like, it's great to have a sit here and laugh and enjoy the fact that United are going through a Hodgson-esque period in their history. It's phenomenal stuff, right? But we have to remember that they were a seventh place team and we treated them as a seventh place team. Mm. And that for me is a new sort of line of mental thought that Liverpool have and they haven't had for such a long time. And Sturridge and Suarez are integral to giving us that, because we believe that we can score against anyone. And those two boys will do the job against anyone in that league. And if you have that belief in you, you believe you can win matches. And that turns you from just being a mid-table team to what we are now, which is champions elect.
Mm. Stay with stuff. Fucking hell, I didn't even notice that. Fucking hell. Jesus Christ. That clearly isn't well. I don't want to dwell on these knob jockeys for too long, but let's be honest, it is good fun, isn't it, to enjoy beating the shit out of United in their own patch. And we wouldn't be Liverpool fans if we didn't wallow in it a little bit. It is brilliant to see that guy taking him down from the inside, just like Hodgson did to us. You must be enjoying it, Jack, are you?
Oh, I love it. Absolutely love it. But you know what, though? Well, you know what? About a Suarez and Sturridge point, does anybody want to talk about the dive, though?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, that's interesting. Go on.
Someone
should discuss it.
You know, in the good old days when United used to win the league, right, they used to have this sort of wanking players who always used to dive calculatively, right? Mm. And then they used to wank off about, oh, well, you know, we used to do it ruthlessly because we used to make sure that we just get a goal, right? Mm-hmm. And so when one of us does it, everybody goes bonkers. Everybody goes mad about how unfair Liverpool player is. Yeah, I mean, have you seen on Twitter about Little Poop.
There's so many good ones.
There's a world of fun there, Jack.
Mark Clattenpool.
I mean,
Chicken Pool Bitch Club is still one. That's the fucking worst one.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was the icing on the cake, was
penalty pool.
Getting a penalty out of a dive in Old Trafford, guys.
Yeah. Oh, that's perfect. Beautiful needle, right? Yeah.
I fucking pissed myself laughing when I saw that. I was like, you know, I was still up out of the chair. Yes, fucking pen on all. I saw the dive and my voice is still gone from the laughter. Like, you know the way people kind of like, oh, we'll skirt over that. Like, you know, one of our players that, fuck it. Every team has players who dive, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Enjoy it. That was hilarious. And the fact that they should have had a penalty as well. And I think that's brilliant.
The best thing about that dive is it wasn't Suarez. If that was Suarez, the only thing in the papers for all, it wouldn't have been 3-0 or anything. It would have been, there's
Suarez.
Wouldn't
have been Lauren Scott on the front of the fucking paper anyway.
But it would have been Suarez dived and won, and Liverpool won the game because Suarez dived. Mm. But because of Sturridge, it gets glossed over. It's the reflection is back on Moyes and his inability, and that's exactly what you want.
Actually, my favourite part about the whole thing was Danny Sturridge utterly failing to respond to your man losing the fucking plot. You're shameful. You should be ashamed. Danny's not even looking at him. Fuck you.
Doesn't give a shit.
I've got a penalty. Up your fucking. It's wonderful.
Off you go.
It's wonderful. So, Niall, to be fair, we could have had at least, and it wouldn't be a stretch, that Fellaini one at the start on Suarez, and definitely there was another foul.
Carrick's
foul on Sturridge. Could be another two penalties. So, you know, at the end of the day, we've hardly had the rub of the green there. What do you think, Nan?
Yeah, that's true. I just want to go back to the Sturridge dive there that we were saying, his reaction. I was hoping he'd just get up and start dancing in front of it. So I'll go with that a bit. But yeah, also, I think it's worth noting the interpretation of the dive as well. It was a dive. We could all see it was a dive. But I just think it's interesting the way Rooney went, basically jumped into the skirt looking for a penalty.
Yeah.
Later on in the game, it was a clear dive as well. I think... it comes down to where the referee buys it, because obviously the two of them are dives. I just think it's interesting, like, if you can get away with it, why not? That's the way I look at it. I'm not going to turn down a penalty at Old Trafford. I don't care if it's a dive or not.
Well, that's exactly it.
I think the tackle on Carrick, that was a stonewall penalty, but by then, to be honest, I had just given up any hope of getting another penalty. So I wasn't even that angry. I just didn't expect it.
Yeah. It's just like, he's not going to get four. Definitely.
No chance.
Do you know what's even better? Did you see the banner of the United fans unveiled for Clattenburg at Chelsea before?
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, chickens coming home to roost.
What was the gist of the banner?
Oh, it was something like best referee leader legend.
It was what you remember, he sent off Terry against United.
It was a spoof on the Terry banner. Yeah.
And they were chanting for him before, saying, "We won Clattenburg."
Yeah, yeah.
After some ref didn't give them a penalty. Hey, he's gonna have him every week, he's fucking cunt.
If ever there's the sign of a crumbling empire, is when you get three penalties given at home against you in a place where you couldn't buy a penalty for 10 years.
That's a very bloody good point, actually. Yeah. Yeah. Thank God for Mark Clattenpool then. We'll move on to Stevie. I want to talk about Stevie before we finish with our review. Look, Rodgers needs a lot of credit here for the way that he's kind of managed him. Stevie there during the week, or was it, maybe it was even today, talking about how he's his best man manager and all the managers that he's had over the years. And as we go to the business end of this season, like last season, Stevie's in pretty imperious form. Looks like the leader that he is. We must be enthused, Lee, about having this guy performing at the peak of his abilities and the run-in.
Yeah, the peak of his abilities. I kind of feel bad actually commenting on this, because about fucking 4 months ago, I was literally saying, oh yeah, no, not a big game player anymore. No, just play him at home against the shit teams. Now I feel like a right fucking muppet. thanks, Brendan Rodgers. Thanks for being such a fucking great coach and essentially converting a chap who could never defend.
That's such a terrible thing.
Rodgers, him.
Lee, get out.
Go back king for
does anybody remember about Stevie giving the challenge to Phil Jones, and Phil Jones sat down there like mop, like a mutt?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Jones looked like he walked in and his fucking man died riding or something. He's just sitting there absolutely shell-shocked.
How eloquent.
But yeah, going back to I sat here and I said at the start of the season I thought we would have been better without Steven Gerrard in the team, and
because we would at the time
we would. But Rodgers really does need to be commended for this. Is two seasons on the spin that his management of Gerrard has resulted in Gerrard second half of the season being at the level of form that we've had out of Steven up to 08-09 when Rafa was in charge, in terms of his influence and his overall input to the way
fucking
we're playing the game.
Imperious, like.
And he's turned him into a real leader. Now, one thing that Gerrard has rightfully been criticised about over the years is that he hasn't been like what you'd see as a vocal leader on the pitch. He's a man possessed this year. And this was before we were even talking about titles and all.
But not just our own players. He's managing the referee too.
Yeah,
I was about to say that. Constant. The hand of the ref is fucking immaculate.
He's just in his ear from minute one.
After the Raphael tackle, Clattenburg was nearly apologising to him. The little slap on the arse and all the games. Sorry for not sending him off, Stevie. Oh, that's a golly. I think, you know, ever since around the derby where he his position was switched back, I think that kind of focused him a bit. Obviously, there was the disaster against Villa, but after that, he kind of regrouped himself. And I think after we smashed Everton, he could smell the blood. Like he said, "Oh, geez, actually, we could fucking win the title here." And I think it's kind of rejuvenated him a bit, because he was going through the motions the first half of the season. Like, it wasn't by accident all that, like, a lot of Liverpool fans were saying that he should have been dropped or whatever. Like, that's what I wanted him to be dropped, like, to get a kick up the arse, because like, obviously he showed at the second half of last season that he does have a lot to offer when his head's there. But like, I just said, ever since the derby, like, he just like you said, he's been a man possessed. Like,
The one argument, and I think it's a valid argument, and it also coincides with Lucas's injury, is that you put Joe Allen and Jordan Henderson or Coutinho alongside him, and he's got runners all around him, and he doesn't have to focus on getting up and down the pitch anymore. He can just focus on learning how to be a defensive midfielder. And going back to a point that we're talking about, can you see John Flanagan being a rifle in a Champions League side? Right. Well, can you see Steven Gerrard being a defensive midfielder in a Champions League side? The majority of games, yes, once he has those bodies alongside him, we will need another player. I firmly believe we need another specialist defensive midfielder, because, you know, you won't get 50, 53 games out of him a season, but we will need him, and he will be still the leader of this team next year.
Jag, a player I'm particularly fond of, in no direct relationship to his ability, I just like the kid and always like his attitude, is Lucas. But it's not looking good for Lucas in terms of getting into that World Cup squad, because you can't really see him getting his game, certainly getting his start between now and the end of the season, the way Stevie's playing, can you?
Well, I don't think... I'm with you. I don't see Lucas coming back immediately, though, with Stevie there like that. You're right.
Yeah, and what, Niall, would you agree, or do you think it's just handy to have him there that he can do 20 minutes for Stevie every so often?
Yeah, I agree. I can't see Lucas starting barring injury, of course. I can't see Lucas getting back into the side. I think, I just want to make one point on Gerrard. I think you can see this season, I think he trusts his teammates a lot more. We were saying earlier how maybe in seasons gone by, Gerrard would try and do everything. He thought, like, you know, I better do something here. We're not going to win this game, whatever. I think now he realises he has the quality players around him. I think he appreciates the role Allen and Henderson play in the midfield, because it makes his job easier. And then, of course, he's always full of praise for Suarez and Sturridge up front, and rightly so. So I think that's also had an impact on Gerrard this year, the fact that he knows there is quality around him and he doesn't have to do it all on his own anymore.
And now, do you think it's that, or do you think it's maybe that he's had a bit of a realisation about his own... the age catching up on a little bit, and perhaps what he's used to be capable of doing he's not anymore, and that's all feeding into to his sort of, as you say, trust of his teammates.
Yeah, it could also have something to do with that. Of course, experience has come into it as well. You know, he's been around the block now. You know, he probably knows he doesn't have the legs anymore. He has to time his runs or whatever. But I think Gerrard has been, over the past few months, I think he's been absolutely brilliant. He's been... he's probably been, stats-wise, he's probably been the most impressive midfielder in the Premiership. I don't know, maybe someone could correct me with that now. But I think he's been as good as anybody these last few months.
Yeah.
Not here.
Sorry.
We'll go with that, Niall. Your stats will work for us.
Well, yeah. He did say, though, in his interview, though, he did say that he was feeling young, being around young guys, but he was also saying that the young guys were doing all his running as well. So he did admit it.
So, there's an acknowledgement of that, yeah.
Yeah.
So if you remember after the Villa match, like, you remember where he was completely overrun? Like, it was a real shock to him. He said after the match that he wouldn't have any complaints if he was dropped. And ever since then, he's been really kind of focused in that defensive midfield position. Mm. Like yesterday, I think Flanagan was the most exposed of our fullbacks, and Januzaj went past him twice, and twice it was Gerrard tracking back inside Flanagan and took Januzaj out.
Yeah, that's massive. Yeah.
Yeah. So like he really has grown into.
Speaking of frankness, he did admit afterwards that he was possibly a bit cocky on the third penalty. Would you, Paul, have any criticism of the man on that?
No, not really. Yeah, which kind of, my mate had a few words.
my mate
really wanted him to score a hat trick at Old Trafford, and he had a few words for Gerrard for missing that. But just sort of heat of the moment stuff. But no, which kind of, like he said, he was caught. I didn't say any cockiness in it. Really, he just went for the corner again.
Yeah.
Like his first two penalties were brilliant and right inside the post. So why not?
Okay.
Theory about that now. Imagine actually scoring a hat trick at Old Trafford. Imagine what that does to David Moyes. He's taking, if I score this, he might get sacked.
Good point.
I see where you're going, Lee.
Maybe, are we going back to the one he missed against Blackburn to get Rob Hodgson
sacked? The reverse Hodgson theory.
Score, keep Hodgson. What to do?
Charlie, where do I put this penalty again?
Charlie, how do you do it? How would you take a penalty, Charlie?
Right.
What, bro?
Okay. Let's move it on to our Cardiff preview then. Like all games over the next 9, 3 points is going to be a must here if we are going to have a chance at this title that we're all sort of dreaming about. Cardiff have been a little bit on the up of late. They're going to be as hungry to win as we are for different reasons. And we can't afford to slip up. So how do we approach it in terms of the shape and the tactics? Are diamonds forever, or are diamonds going to get abandoned and then we go back to a different sort of a midfield look? Jag, what are your thoughts on how we might look against Cardiff in terms of shape and tactics?
I'm pretty daft when it comes to tactics, so I'm going to let the other guys talk about this. I have no idea.
Fucking magic, I like that. Niall, I'm going to come straight to you, fellow. What do you think? Do you reckon the diamond stays, or do you think we're going to go to a different setup?
I reckon we'll go the same way again. I think it's worked for Southampton United. I saw Cardiff play against Everton there last week, and they were actually decent enough. They were unlucky maybe not to come away with a point. But I think the way we're playing now, I expect us to beat everybody. It's gone back to that feeling we had back in 2008-09 towards the end of the season, where you're just full of confidence going into every game. I can't see any reason to change it. I expect maybe we might go back to a flat 4-3-3. Maybe Sterling might come out to the left again, and either one of Suarez or Sterling pushed out to the right. But I think it'll be the same personnel, the same 11 that started the game against United.
Yeah, fair enough. Paul, what do you think? I mean, is it going to stay the same? Stevie during the week was talking about how Brendan has been tinkering. He used the word, but used it in a very positive context, talking about how successful it's been. He was in awe of it. Do you see more tinkering, or do you see consistency?
Well, I hope so. I hope we go back to 4-3-3.
Yeah,
I think it's our best formation, and I think I know. Like the diamond has worked. It's 2-3-0 victories away from home on the bounce. So in that sense, it's hard to kind of argue with it. But I think you get more out of Sturridge and Suarez when, you know, I think it's more geared to creating for them a 4-3-3 is, rather than I think we force it into them in that diamond and kind of expect them to, like, a lot of our attacking was, you know, them running at the United defence and having to kind of try and beat them themselves. Whereas, you know, if you have the three midfielders behind them and Sterling out on one side and then one of them out on another side, like, I think it gives us a better kind of variety of attack. So I'd go with the 4-3-3. And, yeah, we should be smashing Cardiff.
Yeah, Phil, will you be in agreement, Paula?
I don't give a shit anymore, to be honest with you. Really, once we win... we've gone through tactics all season long. We can play any shape and we're capable of winning the game. For me, again, it comes down to midfield. And like we've talked about, Steve, we didn't talk about Jordan Henderson or Joe Allen in the review. And it's worth mentioning that the two guys are going to have another huge role again to play in an away match. And I wouldn't change those two in there for this game, because the way to keep us pressed high up the pitch, being able to pin teams back and win ball in their half, that allows the likes of Suarez and Sterling to create openings and storage to get shots and chances away. That for me will be fundamental in another away game, because Cardiff haven't been great, but they've got good players there, and you know it's going to be a noisy stadium as Cardiff always is, and they'll be well up to try get points out of this, because they can see that there's an escape possible, because anyone in that bottom seven could go down at this point in time. And I just think that we need the same sort of midfield mentality that we had against United on Sunday. And if Henderson plays to that level again, and Joe Allen plays to that level, or even 90% of that level, we'll have too much for them in midfield, and that will give us the platform that we need to win. Whether we play the diamond or whether we play as a three up front, I don't think it really matters that much to me in terms of how we set up against Cardiff, because I think if our midfield three, whichever way it's going to be, because the diamond is a form of three anyway, you know what I mean, then we will have enough to get at them.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about how we sort of brushed over Henderson and Allen in the review, because we do expect, don't we, from Jordan Henderson this constant level of performance, and we only kind of remark on the kid when he doesn't bring it to the table. With Allen in the diamond thing, just to speak about the specifics of that for a second, I have to say I much prefer him in a more conventional tree than that. I don't like him when he's pushed on to the left. I think he finds it hard to settle into the game. There was evidence of that the last day, and then he grew into the game as it went on.
All I'd say about Allen is Swansea boy against Cardiff at the weekend, he is going to be like a man fucking possessed on that pitch. You can put him in any position, he'll probably play every single position on the pitch.
Yeah.
Like genuinely, like that's why I'd definitely play him in this game. For every reason that Flanagan wanted to bash the head off United on Sunday, Joe Allen will have the bit between his teeth to get out and destroy Cardiff on this weekend. So
yeah,
that's what I agree with Trev as well, that I think Allen's better in a normal midfield than in the diamond. Like the diamond, like they kind of, you know, that I think it was okay against someone like United where you're going to need to work a lot, but I think the diamond kind of reduces Allen and Henderson's role a lot to just kind of running. Whereas I think in a more conventional midfield, I think Allen is able to influence the game more.
I don't disagree with you. I'm just saying, I think whatever formation we line up against Cardiff, we're more than capable of winning this
game. I would smash them, don't worry.
What I was going to say though about the diamond is that I wanted to get onto the diamond though. The thing that I noticed. Yeah, cheers, lads. In the corner, yeah. fucking. Like, what I wanted to talk about, honestly, now, as far as tactics go, I'm a bit of a remedial, but what I've been looking at recently now is just when I'm looking at the diamond against Southampton, the reason I think Rodgers went with the diamond and pushed the midfielders out wide was to probably nullify the effect of the charging fullbacks, which is the way Southampton moved their entire formation forward. That was the way to combat it, and just try and cut the supply lines to the likes of Lallana and Rodriguez. And from what I could see against United as well, a lot of what to do with the diamond was, it wasn't even so much about setting up to beat the other team, it was more like nullifying them. I think what he did, he used the energy of Allen and Henderson to push back a lot of the times, as Paul said, do an awful lot of running. But the main part was the fact that when they were doing their running, it was out wide to nullify the wingers and the fullbacks that were charging forward for United. I think Rodgers anticipated in many ways that Wise was going to try to put the defence under pressure by pinging crosses in. And that's what he managed to do. He managed to actually, strangely enough, generally a lot of teams would pile up the midfield to try and, you know, nullify other teams. Rodgers seemed to actually pack the wings out. That's what I think his whole plan was. I read a piece on EPL Index earlier about it, and it actually made an awful lot of sense. They had, you know, a couple of circles in front of the fullbacks, in front of where Flanagan and Johnson would have been. When the wingers got forward, Allen and Henderson were always out there to the side to try and take the ball, like to crowd out the winger or the fullback 2-1 and try and win the ball back and break. That was what I think it was about. Now, coming to Cardiff as regards formation, I don't think we'll need to worry about that so much. I don't think that Cardiff have the players in the wide areas that have the ability to do that kind of damage. So, going back, just co-signing to what Paul said, I'd probably switch to a 4-3-3 as well. And although Phil, I actually was going to take Coutinho out of my first 11 for that, and I'd sorry, take Allen out of the first 11 and put Coutinho in. I thought that he'd be able to thread a few more balls through to the front three. Mm. I thought that we have, like, even in an away game, we would have a bit more freedom of the pitch than we would have had actually at Old Trafford. To, you know,
I thought just with Coutinho and away games from out of form that we've seen this season, I think he was more a better player coming on as a sub on Sunday than he has been in starting those games, because I think Coutinho struggled a bit in away games this year, and I think we've mentioned it a few times as well. And I think, again, you could see the impact if you send him on with 20 minutes to go and the teams are fading, that he gets more space to play in the ball.
Yeah, just a little acknowledgement there. If that was the remedial tactical class there, Lee, fair play to you. I don't think I even qualify for the school, so fair play to you. That's good work. Niall, will you speak to us a little bit about what we can, what we need to be wary of with regards to Cardiff? They seem to be strong on set pieces, for example, where we aren't always so good at defending. What aspects of the Cardiff team would you be wary of?
Yeah, I think the set pieces is a good point. I think that's probably going to be Cardiff's main threat during the weekend. I think a player, Fraser Campbell, he's obviously not the most prolific striker, but he has a great leap in the air. I think that's something we'll have to look out for. Because set pieces we've been found wanting sometimes this season. I think also Rodgers may take into consideration the fact that we have a lot of games coming up now thanks to this game in hand against Sunderland. I think we have three games in eight days, is it? Mm-hmm. So yeah. Perhaps that's one of the reasons as well why I personally wouldn't start Coutinho, because I think Coutinho, as you said before, he makes a bigger impact in the home game. So I think Rodgers will be looking at those two home games against Sunderland and Spurs, as maybe then Coutinho will come back into the side for that. But yeah, Cardiff, to be honest, as the lads were saying, I think we should have too much for them. Obviously, they're dangerous from set pieces, but I think it's at the stage of the season now where we know what we can do, so it's just all about going into every game, having the heads right, and making sure we go out there and do a job. If we turn up, then we should have too much for them.
Yeah, Paul, go ahead.
Yeah, my one grave worry about this match is that while we're smashing Cardiff off the park, okay, they have a player called Craig Noon who roofed Steven Gerrard's house, and we're going to have
never heard that before.
We're going to have to listen to the commentator fucking banging about this all match, okay? And it's 5-0 Liverpool here, where Craig Noon, who once actually roofed Steven Gerrard's house, they cannot resist it, and they mention it. I mean, every 10 times time. Every game. That is my fucking grave worry for this match.
The fuck does that mean?
He used to be a roofer.
Wouldn't it be great if he played for Wigan?
Oh, fuck.
Wouldn't it be great if he played for
what
Wigan?
What do you think, Andy Day raped
him? Dave Whelan's story about when he broke his leg in the FA Cup.
Jag, can I bring you in here, Chief? What are you thinking in terms of Cardiff and anything we need to be worried about? And if you're not particularly worried, you could segue, like Niall did in there, into what you think the lineup will be.
I'm sorry, you're talking about a lineup right now, Trevor?
Yes, sorry, mate. First of all, Cardiff. What are your worries or anxieties about Cardiff? If you have any,
I think the set pieces are going to be a worry as well. And I think it could be a case for Sacco to come in for set pieces. Although Skrtel has been excellent in the past few games, there's always an accident waiting to happen as well in Skrtel when it comes to set pieces. So it might be a case of bringing Sacco in. That's the only thing I can think of right now.
Sure. Okay, right. Let's get round the table and let's get some predictions for how we think it's going to go. There's been some pretty upbeat talk here, so I'm expecting some big scorelines. Jag, we've got you in the line, so we'll keep you there. What are you thinking in terms of score, prediction for score?
3-0 Liverpool.
3-0 Liverpool, that's beautiful. Niall, where are you going with it?
I'm going to go 2-0.
2-0, okay. Paul?
I got 3-1.
3-1, okay. Lee?
I'm going 4-0. 4-0, yeah. What was it? I think we're on a good run of form now. We're five game winning streak, unbeaten in 2014. I really, really would like to put Cardiff into the fucking ground, actually, because, you know, why not?
Yeah.
Why not? We're there. Have a bit of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I can get behind that. Phil, where are you going with this?
I got my traditional win for Cardiff, 4-0.
Thank God for that. Right, okay. That's us then. Let's move on to our listeners' questions, where basically most of the answers that are offered by our friends here are going to be edited out by Phil Scissors' hands on a later day. But We should say this, and this needs to go into this pod so that everyone can hear this. You people are brilliant, and you send us in these fantastic mentalist questions, and you don't hear them. And the only reason you don't hear them is because the guys here cannot be trusted to speak at length of any topic without going into fucking libelous territory. So that's the only reason, lads. And that's just general pod acknowledgement there.
I got to edit that out.
No, you're, because that's too good of a gag and you can't resist it. Okay, first up is from Sport and Believe, and he wonders, this is a bizarre one, why are shoe sizes not universal across different brands? Fucking hell.
Why?
Yeah, go on.
No idea.
You've got no idea.
Well, they're right down the same numbers, don't they? Yeah. Maybe their robots have different feet.
It pisses me off with football boots. Did you ever see it? Like, I don't really notice it that much with runners, but you know football boots, where you can buy a size 9 pair of Nikes or something and they fit grand, then you buy size 9 Predators and they don't. Yeah. Nearly, like, they just about fit you. Like,
why do they do that? I don't understand.
Arseholes. That's why they do it, because they're fucking arseholes.
That's the concise answer there.
Because German feet are different to American feet.
Why are German feet different? That makes no sense.
I feel an edit coming.
What's the distinctive feature of a German foot, though?
Yes, exactly, Phil.
It's thinner.
Jesus Christ.
I think about the Temple Bar charging €8 a fucking pint. Like,
fucking
bastards. Yeah,
what are we thinking about those pictures of Temple Bar with all the green hatted twonks?
Why would you bother?
Oh, Gulag.
God almighty.
Definitely. Green hat, you're getting catapulted into a fucking bear pit. That's what. Fucking
yeah,
arsehole.
Yeah, full on bear pit.
No patching the step aside parade.
Yeah. Next one is from Sashank, and Sashank's wondering if Liverpool's first team corresponded to Hollywood actors, who would be who? So basically, who do you have? What Liverpool player reminds you or represents a Hollywood actor in your head? Anyone got any shouts here?
There's something bad coming here. I can feel it.
Go on, Phil. Go on.
I'm gonna go with Eddie Murphy for Sturridge.
I'd go DiCaprio for Gerrard. Because, you know, he's brilliant and all, but then, you know, there's that one thing he hasn't won that all the fucking dickheads won't shut up about. Like,
I've got that right down there, DiCaprio.
Oh, I got it in, though, yes, didn't I?
Yeah. Why didn't Gerrard win an Oscar? Why didn't he win an Oscar?
Yeah.
I'm going with Woody Harrelson for Mignolet.
Oh, explain your logic.
His nose is fucked up.
What the fuck? I was expecting something way deeper than that. You know?
Fucked up nose. Okay, right. Niall, you don't have a shout, do you?
I'm going with Jordan Henderson and Tilda Swinton.
Yeah,
I think if she had the hair, yeah, definitely.
You think Tilda with a Jordan haircut? Okay, totally weird one from Nick here. He's got an unusual choice for me. I really have no idea what Nick is thinking here, but he wants to know, would you rather always have your shoelaces undone, like all the time, or every time you put your hands in your pockets, it would be full of carrots? Now, that is just brilliantly mental. And for me, it's obviously going to be shoelaces. I'd rather fall over 7 or 8 times a day than have carrots in my pocket, because I'm an OCD kind of a twonk. Paul, no?
Nah, yeah, I can't be done with the carrots, no. Yeah, I'd have the shoelaces. I'd risk injury as well.
Okay, next one is from Paul. And Paul is wondering, this is a continuing theme, if all animals and insects were the same size, which one would win a tournament style to the death contest? So basically, if they're all evened out in size, which creature is going to win? Anyone got a shout here?
I'm going with one of those, you know, those giant elephant dung beetles.
Right, okay. Why is that? Because they're not giant anymore, mate. That's the point.
Well, they are, because they're all the same size. So are we blowing them up or reducing everyone
down?
No,
everything's the same size.
Well, if you reduce everything down to the size of an elephant beetle, that elephant beetle's going to beat the head off you. It's near impregnable. It's either that or a cockroach. Yeah. Those things can survive nuclear holocausts. You're not taking one of them down. The only thing that has a chance against it is a monkey with a knife.
But it can't fight for a shit. It can defend itself.
It has a big, huge snippers on the top of the thing. It goes around and it can fly.
It can fly. It's like a crawling shears.
It's like a giant crawling shears. When you used to watch Robot Wars, right, they used to try make just one of these things all the time that go around killing everything. So now, yeah, an elephant beetle killing everything in the room.
Jag, can you improve on elephant beetle, mate?
No, man, I'm not.
Hang on, lads. You know if the dung beetle got blown up, would he keep his big ball of shite that he could roll on people? Because that would be a shout, man. Who the fuck's going to fight that? All the other animals would forfeit.
Yeah.
One-shot weapon.
Exactly.
Right, next one is, what's the best invention ever? Jag, what's your favorite invention ever?
So I'm gonna go with a serious spin on this. I think the best invention so far is Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
Because without it, I wouldn't be here talking to you guys at 3, 4 a.m. about football.
But there's an obvious downside to that, mate. Yeah, okay, right.
That's brought a tear to my eye, though, Jack.
Paul, go shout for the best invention ever.
Salt and chili chicken wings.
Oh, that's pretty high up there. Lee?
The best invention ever. Now, to make me sound extremely boring.
Yes.
But I am extremely boring, so... My favourite invention, and I think this is the greatest thing since this is sliced bread. This is exactly what it is. The Dyson Airblade hand dryer. Something that dries your hands so quickly. Like it's like a reverse microwave for your hands. Like, it's fucking amazing.
is that the thing in the pub, Jack's? Like,
that thing on the wall. That, like, you put your hand down
into it.
The thing, like a fucking jet engine bleed.
They don't mess about them. They have proper dryers.
If I could afford one of them things, they would be in my bathroom. If I was a professional footballer, I would be endorsing the bollocks out of that thing.
Dyson Airblade is good. Right, we're all sizing each other up here, because the question from Gray is, if you had a fight, this is all of us here, who'd be champion?
Trev, because he has that Mongo Kulchi strength that all the Kulchis have.
That is probably true.
Yeah, they're all born with this kind of knuckle dragon strength.
Go on.
Even if Trev was losing at one stage, like, he'd reach into like a backpack in the corner, he would pull out a potato and and he fucking powered up, he would, and turn green.
Kulchi power.
Kulchi strength.
Oh, Christ alive. Okay. Next one is a kind of, this is going to go to a feature we might bring in eventually. Lucy is asking us a question about how her family hates football and she wonders what she should do. Now, I don't know about you guys.
Kill them.
My family hate football. It hasn't really impacted my life at all. And I haven't had to murder anyone, Lee. So what do we think? Have you, anyone else got football hating families?
Yeah. Kill, cook, sell.
No. You can't get them. I've tried everything to get them involved in football, right? Bringing them to matches, trying to get them involved in the game, the excitement and the whole lot, and they just don't get it, right? So if they don't get it,
go just watch fucking rugby.
Well, we enjoy that as well, but again, I'm the only one that watches that in the house. So, do you know what the best thing to do then is make them sit through documentaries on the television.
Why is that?
Even documentaries that you find boring, it's a way of, like, you know, you there's some stupid soap opera or something on the television. So what you do then is you go, you know, get the remote control hand to you, so you find something to watch on television. Find the most boring documentary on it, right? Something like, I don't know, fucking watching the time stamp of an ant or something like that, right? And for an hour. And just put it on and refuse to turn it off and say, no, this is educated.
Like, really commit to being a bollocks. Like.
Oh, commit to it. Like, if you're not going to watch football and enjoy football, then I'm going to make your life a hell when football's not on the television.
That's interesting tactic.
That's admirable, I'd say.
Jag, have you got a football-loving or hating family?
I've got three girls and a wife who couldn't give a fuck about football, so I'm with Lucy.
Yeah, excellent.
Maybe we set up just a club that we can all go to and all enjoy football together.
We all seem to be in the same boat here. Next one's from Ray, and Ray says, this is a bit upbeat and morbid at the same time, what song would you pick for your own funeral? But Ray has a stipulation, it must be a TV theme tune, which kind of does put a little bit of a spanner in the works. Anyone giving this any thought?
I'd say, you know, as the pallbearers put me kind of coffin down at the top of the church, and, you know, they turn to walk off, if they had the Bill music and there maybe a camera, someone with a camcorder filming the back of their feet, like.
And a photo of Reg on your coffin, isn't that right?
Yeah. I fancy myself as Reg, I do, yeah.
Excellent. Okay, right. Next one's from Paddy. And Paddy should know better than to be asking me to answer this question, so I'm not going to. And he says, if you and your partner or wife switch bodies for a day, would you have sex to see how it feels?
Does it have to be with your partner though?
That is yeah, that's kind of the clincher, isn't it?
No, I tell her to get stuffed and play with me tits all day.
That's a fucking result.
I just like wear bras and stuff. Just for business.
I just wear bras.
It would be deadly. Like, I'd love to try get, you know, see what it's like to actually put mascara on and stuff like that. I know how to do it.
Phil, that's more of a confession than anything else. Yeah.
No, but I'd have to be a woman to do it. I wouldn't do it as a man.
But you've always wanted to, like.
Well, it doesn't look good. Like, I look in the mirror and I still just look like me with makeup on.
Hang on. This implies that you've seen it.
I have, yeah.
Excellent. When did this happen?
In college.
Wednesday.
Sunday, just before the match. I dressed up as Mrs. Myers.
Best of luck, love. Best of luck.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, you were a beast earlier. Right, let's move on. This is from Lost Dub, and he asks, who's the first Man United player that you'd make walk down Grafton Street wearing only a tutu and a strap-on dildo? It's Raphael is the answer to that. I'm not taking any other answers. What a horrible little twat that guy is. I hate him. Okay, last question then is from Joe Pepper. Joe has another face-off, sort of aggressive.
Well, it's a good one because we could make it happen.
It could happen. Joe asks, who would win a bare-knuckle fight between the four major, as he calls them, LFC pod hosts? That's me, Neil Atkinson, Harry Hugo, and John Ritchie. Who's winning that scrap in a bare knuckle fight? Well, I'm just going to, judging by the potato power, Paul's nodding
yeah,
my
direction. Oh, definitely, yeah, yeah. Culty strength wins out.
I think you'd be in with a fair show. Atkinson's a big boy, though. You'd need some tactics there. You'd be drawn on all your culty strength to take him down.
I fight like James Bond, though.
It doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, okay. Interesting. Okay, it's a mix.
You like Samoa Joe against fucking Coco Beware, the board man.
I have no idea what any of that meant. Okay, lastly then, some admin. The HJC Cup Ireland is this Saturday in the Astro Park, Dublin's premier five-a-side venue. Now, the most important thing on the night would be the auction for the HJC, so make sure to bring your wallets. On the line, we have former guest and Irish Cop fun bus driver, Gerard Kane, to fill us in more about what's going on. So, Gerard, what can you tell us about the day?
Yeah, so the day will be starting off, lads, with the Astro Park Airways RSL. 11 o'clock to 2 o'clock, we've the five-a-side tournament going on. We're looking so far, I think we've about 100 people participating in it. Cool. So we're actually getting a real good turn out there. We've actually a team of, as well, some of the Liverpool ladies team as well, they're coming over to participate in it as well. So
fantastic.
That's going to kick off now at 11 o'clock, that'll run till 2, and then we're going to shift everyone up then to the Cuckoo's Nest pub, where they're going to have the match on for a second. We're going to have the Cardiff match on, they're going to throw it out with a finger fill and stuff like that. And as soon as that's over, then we're going to get cracking with the raffle and the auction then. So there's some real good prizes in there. Like, we've signed stuff there from Robbie Fowler, from Jamie Carragher, and all some real good stuff. Jerseys, shorts, football, DVDs, and there's hotel stays and food and drink hampers and things like that. Real good prize in it.
Fantastic. Sounds about as
bit of music then on after that in the Cuckoo's Nest.
Lovely. Lovely.
Drinking session down after that.
Good man, Jerry. Come here. If you're not at the game, can you still come along to the match and the auction and stuff like that?
Anyone is more than welcome. Just because you can't play in the football, don't mean think you can't come along. The more we can have there, the better. We're going to have Sheila Coleman from the Hillsborough Justice campaign coming over there as well. So she'll be saying a few words and she'll be helping us out with the presentations and things like that after. So like, the more we have there, the better. You know, there'll be raffle tickets on sale at the pub.
Brilliant.
The food will be gone, the drink will be gone. It'll be a good day.
Brilliant stuff.
Brilliant. Yeah, well, as you say, it's all about raising a bit of money on the night for as good a cause as you can possibly get. So let's hope people get into the spirit of it. Jared, thanks a million for coming on and filling us in, mate.
No bother, lads. Take care.
Cheers,
take
Jared. Easy, thanks. Mate. Big thanks as always go to Johnny Rep for our intro music. You should check out their single, Give, and follow them on Twitter. Now, as per our announcement earlier, you can follow all our news and commentary over on Liverpool Ways, which will soon get its LFC Day Trippers makeover, so get following that. Likewise, make sure you're following Molly's at Beyond the Cop, as this will be the official Twitter feed of the LFC Day Trippers within the next fortnight. So all our questions, all our articles, everything will be coming via that feed. You can subscribe to All Things Trippery either on Podbean, iTunes, or any podcatchers such as Beyond Pod on Android. And finally, your trippers tonight were Lee Mahady, Paul Brennan, Niall Sheridan, Jagdesh Singh, Phil Casey, and myself, Trev Downey. And now we will go to Adnan. What the fuck is Coco Joe?
It's not Coco.
What the fuck? Okay, right, that's us.